This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, abandoned properties and their value, both in terms of price and how they can be reimagined.
So first, we talk about why this has become such an issue, particularly in densely populated places like Penang. And then we speak with the folks behind Rex KL to get their thoughts on how old buildings can be reused meaningfully.
So tell us, how would you like to see abandoned buildings reused? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It's 6:07, and the inspiration behind our Inside Story today comes from a series of stories covered in The Star, which focused on abandoned buildings. And they talked about how in cities like Penang, we're actually seeing a high number of high-value properties with a fair amount of history behind them, essentially being abandoned.
Let's go with a great example, right? So one of the places they talked about was Udini House, which is believed to be one of the oldest abandoned houses in Penang. It's reportedly been vacant since the 60s, and it's currently valued at more than 30 million ringgit. According to the Penang Heritage Trust, it was previously home to Tengku Kudin, Tengku Abdul Rahman's great uncle, and the mansion was also used by the Japanese Navy as its headquarters in Penang, later on by the British, later on by the Royal Australian Air Force. So in other words, like you said, not just significant in terms of value, 30 million is nothing to sniff at, but also history, and therefore, in some senses, ripe to be reimagined, not bought for the land and demolished, which is a separate conversation that I think some people might want to have.
So if you said 30 million, but according to that article in The Star, there are landed properties that have been valued at more than 500 million that have been left abandoned. And according to the Penang Island City Council councillor, Wong Yue Hang, more than 300 million worth of heritage and pre-war buildings, including commercial and residential ones, have been abandoned. Others that were put up later for sale also met fairly little weren't really seeing buyers because of the pandemic. So this has led to their own host of problems, right? They become a breeding ground for mosquitoes and snakes. They turn into dump sites, essentially becoming fairly unsafe eyesores.
Yes, and then you have also people saying, hey, owners need to be accountable. Well, the counterpoint to that is, yeah, but who owns them? You know, when it comes to heritage buildings, when it comes to deeds that have passed down or been inherited, I think sometimes even being able to track who should technically be responsible or own these things is unclear at this point in time. And therefore, yeah, I mean, never mind Penang, just walking around KL, you are going to be able to see these sorts of spaces where you're like, okay, this is really near the center of town. Mm. And yet it is basically at best a parking lot. And there are no clear reasons as to why that is. A spokesperson actually specifically from Malacca, if you want to draw comparisons of the Straits Settlements, from the Malacca Heritage Trust, said that they also face a similar problem, especially when it comes to older buildings and homes located in heritage and buffer zones. And they brought up the issue of rightful ownership as well, and how sometimes even among families, it's not certain who it should fall to. So yeah, a lot of things going on here, I think.
A lot of things going on. And I think some of this obviously have to do with logistical issues, structural issues. But I think there is also a lack of... I'm going to be idealistic and say imagination, but I think there is a sort of lack of will, a lack of interest in making these buildings sort of a meaningful addition to our current city landscape, right? Because generally speaking, most developments focus around commercial lots, commercial areas, or residential. But these sorts of buildings take work. They take work. They take a fair amount of commitment in terms of revitalizing them. And so that's actually the two halves of our show today. So first, we're going to try and unpack what's happening, why these buildings are being abandoned. And then later we're going to be talking about how these buildings could be reimagined, revitalized. So let us know, how would you like to see abandoned buildings reused? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Charlie Koh, CEO and founder of Urban Metri. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:12. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're talking about abandoned buildings and what to do with them. We'd like to hear from you. How would you like to see abandoned buildings reused? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. First, we're going to be looking at this in terms of what's going on, why these high-value properties are being abandoned. And for that, we're joined by Charlie Koh, CEO and founder of Urban Metri. Charlie, welcome to the show today. And to start us off, at the moment, what happens when buildings are abandoned? Whose responsibility are they?
The key word here is abandoned. The decision on whether a building is abandoned or not is very difficult to ascertain. So whenever there is a dilapidated building or a building that is at risk, which means that people call it an eyesore, it's vacant, etc., local council will then have to come in to take action. Usually in the form of either notices, usually you need a couple of notices to notify the quote-unquote owner and try to locate the owner, and failing of which, then the local authorities can go in to maintain the building or to rectify whatever issues they have, health issues, health danger issues in their building, before the last resort is usually to seize the property. So this is all under the Local Authorities Act, 1976. So if the owner and occupier cause nuisance or allow the building to be in a dilapidated state, then there is a fine of 1,000 ringgit, which is quite small, right? And imprisonment of 6 months or both, right? So that is really what it is based on. But if the local council fails to get in touch with the owner, then they could apply to the courts to seize the property.
So we're talking about this based on some reports in The Star, and in those reports, they also said there are 500 million ringgit worth of abandoned landed properties in Penang, a significant number of which are heritage and pre-war buildings. Why is this happening? I mean, what are the factors that have led up to it?
Well, it's actually a pretty long history. So the of course, you know, as we all know, in Penang, Georgetown is a UNESCO heritage area. So leading up to the before the COVID-19 hit, there was a lot of interest in Georgetown, especially the pre-war heritage buildings, right? So because of that, there was actually a significant amount of even foreign investments and local investments into the properties and the location, driving up the prices significantly. So if you look at surrounding units, they are worth quite a little bit. That allows the value, quote-unquote, the value of the property in that area to go up, right? But a lot of the folks who own these units, there are two issues. One is they inherited the buildings, right, from families from long ago, because they are actually very old buildings. And a lot of them have difficulty trying to locate who is the one in charge of that building. So that's quite common. The other big issue we have is that it actually is more profitable to leave it empty than to actually occupy it. I know that sounds really ridiculous, but because the cost of actually renovating those buildings is significant, right? And the rental you can fetch out of it might not be very high. So it becomes an equation where it's actually more profitable on paper sometimes to leave the units empty than to actually occupy, fix it up and rent it out.
So in terms of valuation then, how much does heritage factor into the price of these buildings?
Well, if you think about the words valuation, I can't really comment how to value a building. But in general, the principles comes from willing buyer, willing seller, right? So whether there's a heritage factor that is, you know, a multiple of something, generally that's not the case. It's what is the market's demand of that location. So leading up to COVID-19, there was significant amount of interest, right, to Georgetown Heritage Buildings, primarily for investment purpose and the tourism that's booming in that location. So rental was going up, you know, a lot of Singaporeans were coming to Penang to gobble up a lot of these units. So prices went up, right? But with COVID-19 hitting, tourism left the city. So the idea of having a heritage building that you have to spend quite a lot of money to do up might not be that appetizable to people, right? So it is a function of whether you can translate that heritage to capital gains. So depending on circumstance and also the macroeconomics in the tourism sector, the valuations will change. So do remember that for heritage buildings, the cost of actually doing it up is significantly higher than a normal shophouse. And the returns are also slightly different, right? Because you're generally in the older part of town that has history and could attract tourism more than a general shop lot area.
So considering then that Penang is an island city where land is scarce, how much interest is there in reusing these buildings or at least the land they're on?
No, so I think, yeah, it is land scarce, but I'm not sure if you realise Penang is also an ageing population, right? So the population in Penang is quote-unquote shrinking, Penang Island anyway, and it is an ageing city. Penang generally would have a lot of interest in using these buildings for tourism and retail related to tourism. So definitely they are scarce and the land they are on has a lot of interest. But is it to use them immediately? That is unclear. It depends on market conditions, right? So definitely a lot of people want them for land banking, I think. But to use these buildings, the cost currently that's needed to rebuild the buildings, redo it, and convert it to something that is commercially viable is actually not that easy.
And is this something we see reflected in other parts of the country?
Oh, yeah. If you look at Kuala Lumpur, the north of Masjid Jama area, Jalan Tah, there's quite a lot of these quote-unquote abandoned pre-war buildings. When you look around it and you walk around and you think, hey, you know, these are such amazing buildings. If only somebody came in and do it up, right? But it costs quite a lot of money. So a lot of people do see the potential, but they are unaware of the hidden cost and also the disproportionate cost of renovation and doing it up that is not reflected in rents and it's not reflected in the economic value that it could bring, right? So whoever who invests in it are actually taking quite a lot of risk, especially when a major part of your traffic comes from tourism, then you're subjected to risks like, you know, the borders closing, that kind of thing. So most people actually make a lot of money just leaving it abandoned.
How does the conversation around abandoned buildings and their value change when we move away from urban centres?
Yeah, so if you look at Klang had a really interesting pre-war part of the city and so did Sungai Besi. So Sungai Besi also had a part of town that is quite old and that's pre-war. And of course, when you're going out of the urban centres, then you no longer enjoy the traffic from tourism, international tourism, for example, because you will have a lower chance of tourists going to these areas. And then your capital case, your commercial case of actually doing up these buildings become even lower, but your cost is the same, right? So if you think about it, why would anybody spend the kind of money in architects, specialized architects, to do up a old building other than hobbyists and enthusiasts to rent it out to a traditional SME? It is actually a very, very difficult decision, right? Because the cost doesn't justify the usage of it at the end. And it's actually much, much cheaper for them to actually move to a modern shop office or modern shops or leave it dilapidated than to actually redo it. Redo it because it's almost like a rebuild for some of these buildings.
So there are a lot of concerns, right, over abandoned properties being eyesores or turning into breeding grounds for mosquitoes and snakes. How does this affect perceptions around the value and potential of these buildings?
Oh, I think the current state of the property doesn't concern the owners because whoever who purchased that property is looking at the future potential or the future use of it, right? So they are really, really land banking. That's why a lot of them don't really concern themselves of actually cleaning it up. because the only people affected by it is actually their neighbors. It doesn't affect their wallet at all, right? So when a buyer comes on, they assume that they have to actually do up the building anyway. So whether the area has been a breeding ground for mosquitoes or snakes, it affects the neighbors today, but it doesn't affect the value of the property at all.
Now, does the cost of renovation where the buildings are in such a state of disrepair also affect potential buyers?
Yeah, so in that sense, you're right. So when the buildings are done up, that means your building is sound, it's already renovated, and it's already fully well-maintained. You see, of course, the state of the building affects the value of the property, right? So which means that when a buyer buys a piece of property, he would consider the state of that building as well as the land that is located. But if we are assuming that these buildings are already in disrepair and they are already been left around for 15 years, the business case for the current owner to do it up for the next owner is actually very thin, right? Because his assumption is that I will just lower down the cost and I will not spend the cash today because I don't know what my buyer wants anyway. So he will just leave it, quote unquote, in disrepair until the day that he wants to sell it.
So what are some of the potential ways in which these kinds of buildings can be meaningfully reintegrated into our cities?
Look, I think the crux of the problem here is that we allow people to land bank and we allow the business case for a building to be vacant to be stronger than for it to be occupied, right? So the rules of the game is such that it's more beneficial for them to actually not do anything and leave it in disrepair than to integrate it to our cities. So if we want them to integrate it to our cities, unfortunately, in this case, we have to use some sort of a stick approach, right? So local councils need to be empowered a little bit more to disincentivize people to actually leave it in disrepair. That's one. Before we can even talk about integrating it into our cities, because if there is no cost of leaving it in a bad state, then they will continue to do that because they get rewarded by it, right? I just leave it for another 5 years and my property value could double. But if I have to do something today, I have to actually spend cash on it, right? Which is an entirely different problem. So a lot of our decision-making is actually financially driven. And unless we tackle that equation, these buildings will always be left in a vacant and abandoned state because it's actually more financially rewarding to do so for the owners.
Overall, how would you say that Penang has done in terms of integrating their heritage buildings into the city?
I think City did a good job in Penang, right? Penang is a very successful case, actually, to driving in tourist attractions, etc. before COVID. But I think the cost of property and the rate that the heritage building rise in value in Penang was not the same as in Melaka. So I think it comes down to the equation where for the owner, is it more beneficial for them to keep it and land bank or to dispose it and make it usable? So when in Penang, what we found was that was a big issue where people was rewarded more for not for just land banking and just holding on to the property.
So what are some solutions you'd like to see in dealing with abandoned properties?
I think local council needs to be empowered a little bit more. They shouldn't be burdened to locate the owners of these units. Right now, their only option is to go to the land office, find the name of the owner. Then they have to go to the JPN and look for the address of the owner, try to contact them. There's no phone number, etc. They could be overseas. So the local council is overly burdened to actually take charge of somebody else's property. And instead of the other way around, right? The property owners should be the one taking care of their property and should make themselves available for contact. In order for them to take responsibility, right? Currently, I think local council, we are making it too hard for the local councils to actually do their jobs, and we need to relax some of these. The penalties for vacancies should be higher. I understand that property ownership is a universal right, but there needs to be also responsibility towards our neighbours and also our cities, because there's a lot of external factors that we have to think about, right? I would like to see that the local councils be more empowered to take action And if the owners of these properties cannot be located, there should be an easier way that either local authorities or the government to seize these properties, right? That would incentivize a lot of the owners to actually take care of their assets and not leave it for the rest of us to clean them out.
Charlie, thanks for speaking with us today. That was Charlie Koh, CEO and founder of UrbanMetry, weighing in on some of the challenges when it comes to abandoned buildings. And after this, we're going to be talking about how we can revitalize and reuse them. Let us know, how would you like to see abandoned buildings reused? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
It's 6:37. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're talking about abandoned buildings. Earlier, we talked about how this is becoming an increasingly common occurrence in particularly urban spaces that are dense. And now we're going to be moving on to talk about what we could be doing with them, how to meaningfully reuse abandoned buildings. We'd like to hear from you. How would you like to see abandoned buildings reused? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789 9889, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Shin Chang, an architect as well as co-founder of Rexscale, also a partner in Mantah Mehta Design. Shin, good to have you with us today. What first interested you in the Rex Cinema as a building and an institution?
So first of all, right, I sort of, grew up in KL area. So Rex Cinema is always a landmark since, you know, many years ago. So I think, of course, when they got up and put it on the rent, on the lease, that I think this is a very good opportunity for us to, you know, revitalize the building. And because it's been sort of dilapidated for a while and use it for other purpose, I feel that it can be better. And, you know, perhaps we can do something better to make a good impact to the whole surrounding area. That's how we got interest on that.
And talk to us about how the Rexscale initiative got going. I mean, what was the initial idea? What were you aiming to achieve?
So basically, as an architect, so we always have some romantic ideas. You know, we want to do something good to KL city. There's always, we want to do something, you know, maybe some design or some street furniture, whatnot. So I think the whole Rexscale, the first idea came to our mind, right? Because we have 7 partners. There's 4 architects in the group and a few. There's 1 design guru. And there's 1 lawyers and all that, different expertise. So we all came into a group and have the same sort of ideas that, oh, maybe we can do something good to this area. What we think this area lack of, right, is maybe the art and culture part. So the first idea came into our mind, right, is how we can transform this building to an art and culture center. That's first thing in our mind. And we try to use design to transform the whole downtown care. Be part of it. We are not saying that in a very ambitious way, but we're trying to be part of it and use design to change the scene. So that's how we got the idea. Yeah.
So this was a project that involved a group of creative entrepreneurs. How important is collaboration when it comes to making something like this happen?
I think it's very important when we say that, because you know that, especially we are starting to expand ourselves to alleys and, you know, or unused space around the town. So it's always good to have different ideas. Like, you know, we have different architects to sit down and talk about the design. And, you know, we have branding gurus and talk about the design, another design spec. Or maybe, you know, the lawyers, you know, can help us to, you know, to solve some legal issue or whatnot. You know? So it's quite important to have, you know, different ideas in the group, you ask me.
And what about community buy-in? I mean, how did the community of Petaling Street get involved here?
Well, I feel that, although, as I said earlier, I always think that, you know, Rexscale is a building without walls. But you know that for a lot of people, right, they still think this is a building. So you ask me about involvement of the whole area, right? I think it's more like a influence, how we can influence them to do something different instead of, you know, selling, I don't want to say fake goods, but we can do it slightly better, you know, to have different things. We can do different things to change the town, the city together. So I feel this is part of an involvement, if you ask me, not physically. I think this process might take years, talking about 5 or 10 years.
So one of the criticisms of RecScale has been that it seems relatively inaccessible to a wider audience, basically that it caters to a rather atas crowd, you know. How have you tried to address this and to make the space feel accessible to the diverse communities that are in the area?
I don't see we are atas enough. And in fact, I think a lot of people think that we're not atas enough. I think that's a very, it's a very generic and broad word to describe whether we are atas or not. Because we have different range. You're talking about price point in the RecScale, inside the building. It's a different, it's wide spectrum, I would say. If it can, we can have a very cheap chandelier from a very, almost like a fine dining sort of, food. It really depends, you know, depends what you want to spend. And we have a supermarket, the Kedai Cheap. You can buy a beer in 8 ringgits, you know. It's cheap, almost the cheapest in the Chinatown, in the downtown KL, you know. So yeah, let's put it this way. I feel that it's more like the content we want to present. For me, right, I'm running a restaurant. So basically, I have a few restaurants. I always think that the price point is always determined by not just the ingredients, also by the creativity. And I always think that we shouldn't justify by the price point just because of the ingredients. Because even the ingredients, right? If you talk about chicken, we have different range of chicken. Different range of vegetables, you know. Maybe we are talking about buying things from smaller farmers compared to chain, middleman, vegetable supplier, right? It's completely different range. It really depends how do you determine this price point. And if you talk about this, right, it can be another topic. No? So for RecScale, we don't want to involve that, to be honest. So for now, but I feel that what we're trying to provide, right, is the honest ingredients. You know, try to support local farmers and all that. And we try to, instead of selling zafan and all that, right? But I think we can have better choice. Because I feel that, right now we're talking about F&B because I feel that in terms of price point, right? Mostly because we only have F&B elements can be criticized for now, not the events, because events mostly are free, right? We have a lot of free music events here. So yeah, let's talk about it, right? If you talk about that, I feel that, you know, it can be, I think it's justified by the ingredients and also the creativity. So atas or not, it really depends how you see it.
We'll continue our conversation after this. We're speaking about how we could be reusing old or abandoned buildings in our urban spaces. And we're speaking with Shin Chang, an architect as well as co-founder of RecScale. Meanwhile, keep sending your thoughts our way. How would you like to see our abandoned buildings reused? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:47. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're talking about abandoned buildings and how we'd like to see them reused. And we're asking you exactly that. How would you like to see abandoned buildings reused? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We are continuing our conversation with Shin Chang, an architect as well as co-founder of RecScale. Shin Chang, so when we're thinking about repurposing a building, especially one that has as much sentimental or cultural value as the Rec Cinema, what do you need to consider?
Well, this is a very broad question. So in terms of design, right, we try for us, right, we try not to disturb, you know, or we try to retain whatever it should be, you know, because it's a beautiful building. It's designed by BEP. It used to be a landmark for big cinema, one of the biggest cinema in town, those days. Yeah, this is what we're trying to retain that. It's not because of sentimental, I think it's because of the architecture itself. I don't think we need to overdo it, you know, if there's a building, it's a beautiful structure around it. I think the keyword of this build project is not overdoing or not over-design. And we're not trying to be avant-garde, to be honest. So the consideration of it, right, is also based on the cost control. We don't want to overspend as well. So yeah, this is roughly on the design part.
So what would you say were some of your main learnings from this project?
As I mentioned, I'm a design architect. So, and also I'm running some restaurants. And most of the restaurants I'm running, basically, we're always dealing with a very niche crowd. And for RecScale, it's the completely opposite of it, you know. So it's almost a space to, it's almost a space that's open to everyone. Everyone has their own idea, you know, own agenda, whatever, to the space. They always have different ideas on it and not whatnot. So I feel that sometime where we just have to focus and know what you're doing. So basically, the whole intention of RexCare, right, is always, and we try to create a very positive space for young entrepreneurs, almost like a platform. Not just for F&B entrepreneurs. I'm talking about a space for, or a platform for young artists, all sort of artists, from music to installation, art installation or design. So I think that's our main focus. So that's why I think what the main point is, what I learned from this project is about focus. Focus your own target audience.
And buildings often have their own quirks and specificities, right? Thanks to the purpose that they were built for and the time that they were built in, among other things. How did you decide which elements of the building you could work with and what might need remodeling or changing?
For repurposing on that, I think we try not to overdo it. I don't think we need to change anything if we can repurpose it. So there's no changing in this. What we need to change is the content. I think what we're doing here for RexCare is mostly for software. The software meaning, you know, content building. So we're designing content rather than designing the building in this particular project.
You talked about this a little earlier, the issue of cost. How much does budget really factor into these sorts of decisions?
Wow. So basically, we are all self-funded. So we don't have big support at the beginning. So everything what we design is all based on budget. I think this is quite normal. And to be honest with you, we are not having a good budget when we started. Most of the things that you see right now in RexCare is add-on. You know, we slowly progress. It's not happened since day one.
And gentrification is also a big issue, right? When it comes to revitalizing spaces and neighborhoods, how can we continue keeping these areas relevant while also not pricing out businesses and people who have already been there for decades?
Oh, I think this is another issue that's always brought out. To be honest with you, I mean, the reason why we get into this building, right? Because we think that the functionality is not relevant because it was a rundown hostel with a lot of, you know, unseen underground activities going on in the building, right? And also it brings a very negative sort of influence to the surrounding. So I feel that gentrification, right, I don't see that this gentrifying because in this part of town, right, this part of downtown KL, this happened every 10 years. You see people come and go. You know? Some of us may might survive throughout the few generation, but most of, I'm talking about 60-70%, right? They come and go. Business close down, my new business coming in. So it's constantly happening. So I don't know how to answer this, to be honest. A lot of people might crease up you because of you doing this and you might price out and some people might left. But this happened since 20 years. Since day one, you know, and this part of us started. So I really don't know how to answer that.
So we're talking to you as part of a larger conversation about repurposing abandoned buildings. What else would you like to see here? How can this be done on a wider scale?
Let's talk about this area first. I feel that, you know, when we talk about repurposing or coming, you know, to repurpose a building or repurpose an area, I always think that we shouldn't just look at one. We should look at a broader context or content. A lot of people come here right now, they are doing F&B, including myself. But what I hope to see, right, is a different sort of services can come in to this part of town. Can be, you know, retail or servicing, retail, whatever. I think this is quite important for now. Otherwise, it will be serving just one kind of function. So how can it be done in a wider scale is, I think it has to become in a collective mind that what we need to do to this part of town. I think it's sort of also what we're trying to do here is trying to influence, give a good influence to people that, oh, maybe you should do this and that, you know, so that we don't, there's not too much competition among each other. I guess we need a different, I think we need a different spectrum. I mean, a wider spectrum of the for contents in this part of town.
So what kind of support is needed from the government or local authorities? Do you think enough emphasis has been given to this?
We try to work with different authorities, and including DBKL and Think City. So Think City actually quite helpful in terms of helping all the stakeholders to revitalize the buildings here. So including giving some funding, some grant to us to make use of the unused space. Say, for example, recently we did a project with them. It's an alley. So we approached them to apply for a grant to revitalize the alley next to Rec Scale. And eventually, we hope that this can be a pilot project and we can extend the alley to wider scale, so around this part of town. So I think they actually, they kind of giving us a positive support, including DBKL.
So in closing then, are there other abandoned buildings around KL that you've been intrigued by or that you think have potential for repurposing?
I think let's talk about this part of town now. I think along Jalan Petaling, there's a lot of abandoned buildings. Most of the building on above ground floor is all abandoned. Probably about 80-90%. So perhaps someone or anyone who are interested to make downtown KL into a role model for other part of town, I think perhaps this is a good opportunity, because I feel that this part of town is booming. A lot of people pay a lot of attention in this area. And there's a 118 tower, 118 Manawana is coming up. I feel that there's a lot of energy, good energy coming in. I think that, but it's talking about potential, I think a lot of potential here. So it's just that we need more people to come in to look at this.
Shin Chang, thanks for speaking with us today. That was Shin Chang, an architect and co-founder of Rec Scale, as well as a partner in Mentah Mehta Design, weighing in on their experience in revitalizing and repurposing the Rec building into Rec Scale. We'd like to hear from you. How would you like to see abandoned buildings reused? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. I think we have time for some thoughts.
Madhav says, hire Poison Ivy from Batman and Robin to fill the abandoned buildings with all the flora in the world.
I love how Poison Ivy over time has actually become the ideal we should aspire to.
Yes. So firstly, I think it's a great idea. I do love re-greening buildings.
Without the murder, hopefully.
Without the murder. So firstly, I love the vision and I really like the visual that it has evoked in my brain. I don't know if she's for hire.
No, she does it out of passion.
Yes, that's true.
We have, Crispy Bacon saying giving buildings a new life should be something the government must be more serious about, especially pre-Merdeka buildings. Only Malacca and Penang can we see these buildings restored to their glory as functional yet modern buildings.
And both Malacca and Penang, in fact, are pointing to difficulties in actually ensuring that that happens across the board, especially when I suppose you're outside of the heritage areas, but also when it comes to complicated matters like who actually owns the building, which is the point brought up by Benji, who says abandoned buildings are that way for a reason. Oldies that didn't believe in will writing pass away, then leave an inheritance mess, someone to sell it, someone to keep it. Some siblings want to stay and use it, but usually get into problems with the two groups above. Nobody sees eye to eye. Then the answer is to leave it empty.
Yeah, I mean, I think our earlier guest, Charlie, touched on this, right? The fact that often ownership and who gets to make the decisions in terms of the sale or the use of the building becomes really quite sticky. And the longer back you go, the more people are usually involved. Anyway, keep those thoughts coming. How would you like to see abandoned buildings reused? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.